Hi, this is Malia Cromer, director of the Goucher College Poll, and you're listening to the Conduit Street Podcast, a source of news and notes on Maryland politics and policy viewed favorably by an overwhelming majority of Marylanders.
Welcome to a special edition of the Conduit Street Podcast. This is Michael Sanderson joining you out of sequence, but joined by Chantel Malcolm-Lim from the MAKO team. Welcome, Chantel.
Hi, Michael. Hi, everyone. I am glad to be back on.
Well, we're glad to have you, Chantel. So our listeners know we don't usually drop day-by-day content. We're usually a sort of a once-a-week outfit when we can pull that together, and that becomes difficult during the spike time during legislative session. But we're in the middle of some kind of interesting and timely policy debates right now here in Annapolis. And as Chantel and I were working through that, we kind of had this idea, right?
Yeah. So back when session started, we did a lot of coverage of having county leaders invited to speak in the Appropriations Committee for a full afternoon of briefings on the effects of transportation, on the effects that transportation cuts would have on our local communities. Now, we thought these local perspectives were really good, and they played a role in how the delegates now feel about transportation funding. And that's what's on everybody's mind.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think the Appropriations Committee went out of their way and said, this is a topic we haven't really heard a lot about before. Right. So let's clear some time and hear from the mayor of Baltimore, we'll hear from the president of MAKO, we'll hear from sort of on the ground public works staff from across counties, and they'll talk about what this would mean. Because to them, sometimes these things just look like a column of numbers, and they wanted to put a face on it. So as Kevin and I discussed in our podcast that we dropped just yesterday, we're recording on Tuesday. We're hoping you'll hear this on Wednesday, but we just released a podcast on Tuesday morning. There's an open question still right now about whether the state needs to make some deep cuts in the coming years of funding for local transportation, the highway user revenues. That debate is playing out right now, real time.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of the amazing lineup that we have, I was very impressed hearing Mayor Scott talk about how important this is to Baltimore City. And then, of course, MAKO President Johnny O talked about both Baltimore County and about all the other counties. And of course, Michael, you did your thing. You did a good job talking about the history and how we got here, right?
I do my thing, right? So I got a little longer leash than usual. Sometimes Annapolis tells you you get 2 minutes and they drop a gavel or ring a bell and you have to get away. But I got a few minutes to kind of get rolling there. But so here we are. We thought it would make sense for our podcast listeners to get a glimpse of the same stuff that kind of moved the needle for us. So we've pulled the audio from that briefing back in January. And with this little bit of setup from the two of us, we hope that you will have a listen. County leaders at the table, they're making the case on why cutting back on highway user revenues doesn't make sense and how it would just mean service and safety cuts back in our communities.
So with that, folks, here's the audio from the kickoff panel of local leaders before the House Appropriations Committee on January 16th. The first voice you will hear is Chairman Ben Barnes, and then our panelists will speak.
All right, we're now joined by John Olszewski, the county executive from Baltimore County, and also the, president of MAKO, current president, as well as the mayor from Baltimore City, Brandon Scott. And Mr. County Executive, you know you're supposed to be called by your highest title you've ever received, so I'll call you delegate here today. Welcome. Oh, and I'm sorry, Michael Sanderson from MAKO is here as well. Excuse me, Michael. Nice to see you. Yep.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Chang, Madam Speaker. Always good to see you. Really appreciate the opportunity to return to the old stomping grounds. Mr. Chairman, I appreciated your remarks at the top here. I think they really spoke to me and my colleagues in local government. Proud to be here. Johnny Olszewski, in addition to serving as Baltimore County Executive in my capacity as President of MAKO. Later today, you will hear some details, not just from Mayor Scott, but also from some of my colleagues in local government about their concerns and the importance of these transportation funds and their impact both to Baltimore County residents, but residents across the state of Maryland. We do know that the proposed cuts that were originally discussed in the first panel really do impact communities across our entire state. They're concerning not only to my colleagues in county government, but my peers, and we are grateful for the committee and the speaker taking the time to allow us to have this forum to share those concerns with you. I do want to express my gratitude to the Moore administration and to Secretary Wiedefeld for also taking these issues seriously in detailing the challenging situation they faced and for remaining in regular communication with us. We also want to thank the administration for their announcement earlier today of that one-time funding that you all have been discussing. We do know that these efforts are desperately needed because, as I've said recently, we truly are in many ways facing a perfect storm of fiscal challenges. In local government, we're seeing a slowdown of revenue. We're seeing cost drivers on our massive projects, things like inflation, healthcare, energy, all the things that we buy and invest in have become much more expensive. We have many expectations in local government around things like the blueprint that we want to invest in and be a partner on, but we're being asked to do a lot, all at a time when our federal funds that were meant for one-time expenses are also drying up and really challenging us to sustain that work that many of our members of our communities have expected. The storm is particularly challenging, layering on the issue of transportation and transportation reductions. I will just put my Baltimore County hat on for 30 seconds and talk about highway user revenue. Just for example, prior to the cuts that we made back in 2009, the local share that went to Baltimore County alone was about $45 million annually. And again, we very much appreciate the one-time restoration of HUR, but those figures, even with restoration, are nowhere near the 2009 levels that we had experienced and really benefited from in Baltimore County and across the state. Our one-time fix takes Baltimore County, we believe, from about $11.5 million to $13.75 million. That $31 million difference over the past many years is about a $450 million difference in what Baltimore County has received. And to just put that in perspective, we recently did a comprehensive roadway analysis, and that is about the amount that's needed to put all of our roadways back to just average condition in Baltimore County. So the truth is many of us need not only the restoration, but could use additional support, not just for our roadways, but for things like ensuring new construction on the Red Line is funded and supported in the long term. Indeed, while I'm familiar with the cases in Baltimore County, we know that we're not alone. And unfortunately, as has been pointed out by members of the committee, one-time funding means that we're back at square one again next year. So while appreciated and helpful, we do want to sort of work with all of you to make sure we're thinking about those long-term sustainable solutions so that we're not back at the conversation about the department having to offer additional cuts, reductions in commuter to bus service, local transit systems, or other desperately needed projects. So the bottom line is that cutbacks mean lost service down the road, but not very far down it. So again, we appreciate the one-time funding, but we want to not lose sight, as Delegate Watson said, about having that reliability and that sustainability, because we know that in the years ahead, counties are not going to be in a position to backfill lost state support. It's going to mean a reduction in service to the people that we all serve together. So as a former member of this body, I'll just say I have a great deal of respect and appreciation and reverence for the work that you all do. We recognize that there are competing interests at play here, but I know that we are in very capable hands, and I just want to express our appreciation for this opportunity, Mr. Chairman, Madam Speaker, and members, and we look forward to, on behalf of MACO, being at the table to find those solutions with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Madam Speaker, and entire member body. As you know, I'm Mayor Brandon Scott, the mayor of Baltimore City, and I'm here today not just with my center, I'm the point guard on our basketball team, but also with Mark Anthony Thomas from the GBC and members of my administration, because while we appreciate that we had the Moore administration announce a one-time restoration of HUR funds this morning, we cannot plan for future years without insurances of funding. We need full restoration of HUR through fiscal year 28, as the Maryland General Assembly passed last year, so that major projects can move forward. And to be very blunt, Baltimore should not be facing a 63% cut to HUR, which is higher than the rest of the state combined. And the fix that we have now been proposed does not allow for us to program for our larger capital projects, properly fund MTA for state of good repair, or have planning for the much needed red line. And there have been instances before where it has been easy to balance the budget on the back of Baltimoreans. We know that previous administrations took that route, but we don't have to take that route again. But I know that you know, and that Governor Moore knows, that as Baltimore goes, so does the state of Maryland. We have the opportunity, but a responsibility, to chart a different course and stop the legacy of putting the burden of budget cuts on the back of our most vulnerable residents. The stakes couldn't be more high. This weekend, thousands of Marylanders from across the state will come to Baltimore to cheer on the only winning football team in Maryland, the Baltimore Ravens, at a home playoff game. Yet, two of the main thoroughfares to get there, the Hanover Street Bridge and the Russell Street Viaduct, are now at risk. The condition of our aging infrastructure has been exacerbated by losing $900 million in HUR funding and approximately $3.6 billion in potential federal matching funds as a result of the cuts initiated many, many moons ago that my colleague just mentioned, which have never been restored. Beyond critical infrastructure like our bridges, 70% of our roads need to be repaved, and we have a 7-year backlog of sidewalk repairs. Since 2014, the city of Baltimore has had to take out transportation revenue bonds, contributing to the city's debt service just to do basic service. Now is not the time to roll back our progress even further. If the proposed transportation funding cuts are adopted, 190 lane miles in Baltimore City will not be resurfaced through fiscal years 25 through 28. Potentially impacted areas include Bel Air Road, 33rd Street, Northern Parkway, North Hilton, Pulaski Highway, Ashland Avenue, Oliver Street, Patterson Park Avenue, Washington Boulevard, Broadway Street, Drew Park Lake Drive, Lafayette Street, and Patapsco Avenue. If the fiscal year 25 HUR is maintained, but cuts are made in the future, 170 lane miles in Baltimore City will not be resurfaced in that time span. And as a reminder, unlike my counterpart to my left in every other jurisdiction in Maryland, Baltimore City has to repave all of our roads. None is done by state highway. So again, while we appreciate the efforts of the governor and state to make one-time restoration and acknowledge the difficult position that our governor is in, and that that position is as a result of decades of disinvestment made by previous administration, we are respectively requesting that the state preserve our recently secured HUR funding formula through fiscal year 28 so that Baltimore City can recover from previous cuts to the city HUR and fully leverage the federal infrastructure bill to continue to build Baltimore's renaissance. But this is not remotely just about the health of our highways. 8 years ago, Baltimoreans who used public transportation were devastated when not only the original red line was canceled and Baltimore was literally taken off the transportation map, but also when continued cuts and disinvestment to MTA dressed up as a new bus system further worsened Baltimore's public transit issues. Though, again, we appreciate the one-year solution, we must focus now on the following years in order for us not to again have subpar public transportation. 27% of Baltimore City residents do not have access to a personal vehicle, and in many of our historically disinvested neighborhoods, that number is as high as 59%. Proposed cuts that impact mass transit options disproportionately impact those who are in need of investment more than anyone else. The Charm City Circulator ridership was approximately 1.3 million passenger trips in 2023. The Harbor Connector had 230,000 trips in 2023, and 27,000 Baltimore City public students use MTA each and every day during the school year. And that is very personal for me because I was once one of them. And I had to wake up at 5 a.m. in the morning, get on the bus at 5:30 in the morning just to go from one side of town to the next. And in fact, Mr. Chair, leaving Mervo after track practice, it was faster for me to catch the bus downtown and catch the subway back uptown and walk from the subway station to my house than it was for me to catch one bus across town. We know that our students deserve better. Everyone that lives in the region that depends on MTA deserves better. And when I talk to business leaders from downtown Baltimore to the Port of Baltimore, even out to Trade Point Atlantic, they all share the same refrain. We love having your residents work here, but they can't get here on time because they depend on MTA. This is a quality of life and a civil rights issue. Yes, this work will be tough, but tough time calls for the best leaders who will do the tough work when it's necessary to be done so that we are investing in everyone, especially those who have been disinvested for generations. I believe and know that we have those leaders, not just in this committee and the General Assembly, but in our governor, and look forward to working alongside each and every one of you to work towards a solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Madam Speaker, and members. I'm Michael Sanderson, Director of the Maryland Association of Counties. I wanted to add a little bit of context on highway user revenues, because this construct is not, it's unconventional in some ways. There are basically three ways that states across the country take care of the little roads, not the big highways, the smaller roads, Main Street, downtown, the roads that get you from place to place, the roads that get you home. Three models. Some states take care of it all themselves. Local governments don't have any role in that. And the equivalent of state highway comes to your hometown and patches that pothole and takes care of, you know, if there's a safety problem, they come in and do the widening and so forth. The state does it all. We don't do that. Second model is you give the local governments who have that responsibility their own transportation revenue authority. Some places have local gas taxes or an add-on for the vehicle registrations or license plates or other things like that. That's model two. Maryland doesn't do that. But for decades and decades, we use model three, which is the state takes care of it and sends it to the locals. Where are the cars and where are the roads? We have one tax on motor fuels. We have one tax on vehicle purchases and so forth. All that goes into the gasoline and motor vehicle revenue account, and 30 cents went back to the locals. By the way, to take care of 83% of the road miles, virtually everything in Baltimore City and all those road miles that don't have numbers on them. It's just thousands and thousands. That model served Maryland great for decades. And we were comfortably in one of those three categories of how do you do this? A, B, or C? We're in group three. That's fine. I know it's 15 years ago, and that's like political paleontology in a world where four-year cycles. I get it, but I was in this room. The real dawn didn't happen here. It happened in the Board of Public Works. The General Assembly at that time, this was the Great Recession, right? We were wave after wave of budget cuts, and things were tight. Things were tough. The General Assembly said, we're in a pinch. We need a local government contribution. We're going to make a couple years of cuts. We're going to dig into highway user revenues for about $100 million for each of a couple years to help tide us over. And local governments, for the most part, said, we don't like it, but we can postpone some projects. We can do without $100 million for this year and next. We had done it under Governor Ehrlich's regime. We were prepared to suffer for two more years under Governor O'Malley's regime to be part of the solution. But what happened was that summer, after the General Assembly had passed the budget and the plan was balanced, Great Recession continued, and by August, the numbers were still upside down, and the Board of Public Works took 90% of the rest. 90%. You know the law says the Board of Public Works can cut budgets by 25%. There was a little creative arithmetic that got them through out of the whole transportation budget. It was less than 25. Local governments were on a starvation budget. And then the following year, the recession was still tough. The state budget was still upside down. And that year's budget reconciliation bill said, we're going to rebase at that number. It's starvation diet forever. So where's Maryland right now? We're not in group one. We're not in group two. And we're not even in group three. We don't treat those little roads honestly. And I don't mean tiny roads, but everything that's below the numbered road in Maryland, handled by local government, handled by your leaders here. This is exactly who should be on this panel. Baltimore City has more at stake in the current cuts than everybody else put together. And a county like Baltimore County is further behind than anyone else. They don't get the benefit of incorporated municipalities who have gotten a little bit more boost than others. Towson doesn't get the same treatment as Rockville. We are upside down on managing local roads. These cuts make it worse, but we are already circling the drain on this. So it is red alert stuff for your colleagues and your partners in local government. We are grateful for the one-time parachute, but as you've heard multiple times over, Band-Aid, that's all we got right now. So this is a major issue for your partners in local government, and you'll hear programmatic stuff from folks who are yet to follow.
And to follow, we have folks from many jurisdictions to talk about on the ground and how this could affect them and projects as well, not just the HUR, not just MTA, not just WMATA. We do have some questions, Delegate Grice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Michael, I know we're talking a lot about roads, but in a lot of our, especially our rural jurisdictions, bridges, I mean, if those don't get replaced, what happens to them?
Yeah, we all know. I mean, an enormous amount, like highway user revenue is the euphemism, right? Governments are good at making alphabet soup and that sort of thing. HUR doesn't sound like anything. It's day-to-day maintenance. It's safety improvements. It's filling potholes. It's plowing snow. I mean, that's quality of life stuff for everybody in Maryland. And the safety of our bridges, I mean, the count of structurally unsound bridges we have across the state has enormously jumped in the time since 2009 when we shut off the spigot for all that local support. So we're in a bad place.
Yeah, I was a county commissioner 10, 15 years ago, and we had three bridges that were completely out, and you have to close the entire road if the bridge is out, right? They still haven't been replaced yet. And mainly because of the historical perspective, what we did during the O'Malley years. Thank you.
Thank you, Delegate. One of our newest members, welcome, Delegate Ruff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sanderson, thank you guys, all of three of you, for your presentation and for your comments. Mr. Mayor, as you know, we grew up eight blocks apart, so I remember jumping on the M3 to the 44 to get to Gilman School and understand those troubles. Mr. Sanderson, if I could ask you, if we could go back a little bit to the CTP, can you give us an understanding in your experience representing local governments how the CTP roadshow was different this year in your view than in prior years?
I think you can probably hear nuts and bolts on this from some panels that are to follow and my colleagues on the panel. I will say, you've already heard from your professional staff, from the General Assembly's professional staff, the unique circumstance of this year's CTP in draft being an all-consuming list of projects rather than a refined list. And if part of the annual process of having a draft CTP is to gather community response, this project is in, this project is delayed, this project is out, and the community can respond to that and say, now, oh, that's going to be, if we have to wait three more years for this important project, that's going to be a problem in this community. And the department, you know, in theory, the structure is for them to hear that. I think you miss some of that with the lack of specificity with the broad list this year. With still everything still on the CTP and it being out of balance, it makes it less of a useful document for community input. So when we say the process was different this year, I think that's where it's most consequential.
Understood. Can you give us a sense from a high level, and I know we're going to hear from from all the municipalities that are here. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a high level understanding of how and to what extent our local governments rely on the CTP and on it being balanced and on it being timely?
Right. Well, the CTP is the vision for the large projects that for the most part are out of the grasp of any, even your largest local jurisdictions. Like there's no way that this mayor can orchestrate a new line, a new transit line within Baltimore City with local resources. Those things have to be a collaboration with the state and with federal partners. There's no way projects of that magnitude, the capacity projects that are in the CTP and so forth, those have to happen through a statewide vision. So local leaders are consulted. The department goes, you know, the whole roadshow process is visiting local jurisdictions, seeing things on the ground, getting a list of priorities from each area. And those will be a combination of here's the big project, but here are some smaller issues that might be easier to reach financially, and here are the consequences of those. You can hear that more readily through input with local leaders than you can with professional engineers consolidated in the State Department. I think that's what you get out of that process. When the draft comes out and doesn't say these are the 20% of these projects that actually aren't going to be able to get funded in these next 6 years, you lose that ability to engage on those issues on the margin. And that's usually where a lot of the conversation lies.
Right. And based on what you're hearing, how are local governments really dealing with this? Or how are they navigating, you know, based on the feedback you're getting, the unbalanced budget, and the lack of time to really plan, based on the release of the CTP?
I guess I would say we've been in uncertainty and maybe alarm mode since early December. So, I mean, the secretary and the administration reached out and said, you know, we're out of kilter. You just got a very, very clear presentation of how September to December made this problem worse. And the notion that that would turn into an across all modes, including local support solution over the years to come, and that it might be this stark of a hit on highway user revenue and on locally operated transit systems. It ends up with jurisdictions who are already upside down in their budget. Like you just heard about Baltimore County, every county has a similar story of soft revenues, driving costs, and expectations that are high, and federal support disappearing. So everybody's already in the middle of that. The idea of, well, now presented with how can you backfill a state cut like that? And I think many of our local jurisdictions are talking about this will turn into service cuts as opposed to reallocate from somewhere else. We had a conference like a few days, you know, a conference of county leaders on the Eastern Shore just a few days after these announcements. And this was what everybody's talking about in every hallway at that event. So this is top line stuff for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Delegate Rao. Great questions. Any other questions for this panel? Delegate Watson.
Yes, thank you. Just before you all take your seats, in general, I wondered if you could respond to the impact of on the cuts that we're seeing in the large projects, which we're going to hear about next. How does the delay of these projects impact potential federal funding?
Well, I think, and thank you for the question, and I think we might lose it, right? That's the reality. It might not be there much longer. We have the stars aligned right now to pull down lots and lots and lots of federal funding. I think we all have a front row seat to the insanity that happens in DC from time to time. And we don't know how long we're going to have that. And that means that these projects that have been longstanding, that should have been fixed 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago in some instances, will have to wait. And at some point, one of those bridges will fail. One of those things will crumble. And then it will be on all of us for not doing the tough work and just waiting until things got better. We have to do the tough work now.
I won't repeat the mayor's comments. I'll just add, you're going to hear from some colleagues in Baltimore County who will, one of those major projects has literally been the number one priority that we've shared with MDOT for 15 years in a row. 15 years. That was before 2009 cuts. That was before the Great Recession. So, not only do we risk losing the federal support, but it goes back to your point about, I think, certainty, Delegate. And I appreciate the question.
Thank you.
Certainly seems like the time to solve this is now. We're hearing from that from you loud and clear. So we appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you all for being with us very much and your leadership.
There you have it, guys. The full briefing is actually available online. We'll be sure to link that in the show notes. Michael, you sounded kind of like a grandpa there telling stories of the olden days, the days that came before. You
know? Okay, well, I don't know about all the grandpa stuff. I mean, I kind of own that. I get it. I've been doing this a pretty long time. But I mean, I do think these are important stories. And this context, I think, is really important. It's tough. If you're in the political world, you tend to think in like 4-year cycles. That's a full generation in politics. I'm super glad that Chairman Barnes and the committee took the time to really dig in, to listen to the panelists, to ask a number of questions. They did the same thing with their own policy staff before this panel, sort of trying to dig in and understand this stuff. And I don't think it's any surprise that they spent some time understanding this topic really, really well early in session. And here we are now, late session, where it's the same members of that committee. They're the ones who are really resisting making these budget cuts. They heard what those cutbacks would mean. You cut $200 million from local roads and bridges, and we're all going to feel it, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And you know what? I'm sold. And let's hope that the listeners out there are sold too. And listeners, speaking directly to you, if you happen to know any of the delegates and senators who are in the middle of the budget showdown, reach out to them on this. Definitely reach out to them on this.
I like it as a call to action. I mean, So I will say this is a little unusual. I usually don't listen to our own podcast when I'm on. When it's my colleagues, I listen. But for me, like hearing my own voice as it's recorded and broadcast it's just upsetting to me. It's so different from what the voice I hear in my own ears. I'm just, I do not like this. Unsubscribe.
I mean, agreed. I've definitely been there. I can honestly say that the podcast that we recorded the last time where I was on, I definitely skipped all the parts where I talked. I just did a little skip. But, you know, I think at this point, we should just build a bridge and get over it. That's what people tell me because I think I'm in the same place.
I'm told this is a really common thing. I've had this conversation with people before, and apparently lots of people share this feeling. And the voice you hear, your own voice that you hear in your ears, is just different a little bit than the voice that the world hears.
Yeah.
All I can say is I will offer a testament that the voice in my ears that comes from me is rich and melodic and appropriately serious, and it conveys all the gravity or emotion that I want to convey. I'm very effective inside my own head. I feel like I'm less so in the actual recordings and on the podcast. So I don't know if I could get you all to hear the voice that I hear, I might have a genuine podcasting future.
Oh Lord. But I mean, what are we doing now? I think you're making something out of nothing here because we're already here.
I feel the same way about your voice. I think it's a great change of pace for us because Kevin and I will get chattering back and forth and where we nerd out and so forth. But this banter is great for me. So thank you for that. I'll sleep better and I hope you will too.
Thanks for having me on. I'll be sure to sleep well tonight.
I like it. Friends, we'll leave it there for today. As always, if you enjoy the Conduit Street podcast, go ahead, subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. That's the best way to get the word out. But once you subscribe, that way all our episodes will be sent right to the device of your choice. You can follow along Mako and the Conduit Street on social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days. And of course, you'll want to be on the Conduit Street blog for day-by-day coverage down the stretch of this session. We'll be back soon with more policy and politics coverage. So for my co-host and our producer, Chantel Malcolm-Lim, this is Michael Sanderson, and we will talk to you soon.